Hi, everybody. This is Rita Prazeres Gonçalves, linguist and senior talent management consultant. In this podcast, I have conversations with language professionals who are willing to talk about their experience, their knowledge, and their strategies to navigate the ever-changing language industry. This is also a space where I can learn and share my insights. I have been working with LSPs, enterprise clients, and freelancers for over 20 years, and my main focus is talent management for the localization industry. Let's get to know some of the most interesting people in our field: translators, company owners, association representatives, and community builders. This is The Language Worker. This podcast is also available as a video cast on YouTube. Hi, everybody. Very excited because today it's something that has been a long time coming, especially, well, Sara, I've just met for the first time, but with Flow, I like this Flow thing, right? Flow as well. We have been talking about coming on the podcast and this and that, and we have things in common, and she's really particular in her profile and in the things that she posts and in the words that she calls herself. So she's like, wow. And I'm like, wow, fascinated by this. But let's have her on the podcast, I thought. And then we postponed. And then now, since these ladies and another lady have an event coming, I thought, well, this is going to be the situation. So let's call it an emergency. I have been calling this all day, right, to the podcast today, to the episode. So let's have an emergency episode that we will just record and publish, and that be that, so that everybody can know about this event. But before that, I always start with the person I know first, right? Or I met first. So I'll go with our Flo, and let's see who Flo is, starting from the early beginnings of her, love for languages, right? This podcast is about languages, huh?
Oh man. Oh, I don't know. I mean, I started learning English when I was 7 years old.
And very well.
And well, thank you. And I actually thought that I wanted to be a teacher. Because that was like the degree that there was in my hometown, which is like 7 hours away from Buenos Aires, where I'm living right now. And I did start the teaching degree, but then I dropped out to become a translator and interpreter in Buenos Aires. So I came to Buenos Aires and I started the entire, career kind of thing. And that was it. And then I also started learning Portuguese in 2010.
Brazilian Portuguese, she's trying to say.
Yes, exactly. I'm sorry, Brazilian Portuguese. And so I also added Portuguese to my work languages. I don't really use Portuguese as much as English, Spanish, but yeah. And that's how I kind of met with the girls from Urgas, and Sara is one of the girls here.
Okay, let's hear from Sara, one of the girls. So, Sara, what happened for you? Nice to meet you because it's like the
Nice
first
to meet
20
you.
minutes that we see each other. But how did you start into this? I mean, were you also a child when you started studying languages? It happened later for you? Was it like for some particular reason? So, what happened?
Yes, I started learning English when I was 10 or 11, I don't remember. And later on, I was a teacher. And then I started working with theater. I'm an actress, yes. And that's how I fell in love with languages because I had to work with a lot of people from different parts of the world. And that's how I met the other girl from Urgas. We are a transfeminist collective, and that's it. I don't know. It's very hard for me to introduce myself.
Yes, I know. It's the same for everyone, right? So it's really complicated to talk about yourself, but we're here to talk about yourself. To you girls. So, Flo, what was your first translation job? Let's call it that. So which subject, from where? It came from an Argentinian agency, it came from another type of company. So what happened there?
Oh my
What
God,
was
I
the
cannot remember.
introduction project? Oh, you forget your first one.
I think it
Okay,
was,
full of
I don't
first
even,
ones.
I know that it was in 2009 and 2010, but I honestly cannot remember. I do believe there was this big, quite known agency from the US. I'm not going to name it, of course.
But I did a couple of little projects with them. But then in 2013, I started doing audiovisual translation, and that's what I've been doing for the past 15 years or so. No, not 15 years, 10 years, 15 years that I started. I know languages, not numbers or maths. You don't care about dates. I don't really. So I started doing audiovisual translation, and then that was pretty much what I specialized in. And then when I came out of the closet, I started doing queer translation. That was like 8 years ago or so, I guess. We'll So forgive you with the dates. We'll forgive you. Don't worry. I honestly do not remember the very first project I had. Okay. What about you, Sarah? Do you remember any ideas? Like you're
No,
talking
I
as if
don't
it was
remember. I
like
hope
50 years
you
ago.
forgive me because of the dates. I have the same problem. My memory is not so
It
good
runs in the
with dates.
Argentinian blood.
Yes. But I understand that I started translating. I don't know. I think in Urgas, because before it, I used to translate, but not in a professional way. I was translating because we had to communicate inside theater groups. And I
Right.
think that's the main thing of translation, to communicate. I
Of
started
course.
translating because of that, too.
So because other people needed you to actually help them understand what you guys all as a collective needed to be understood.
Yes, that's it.
It's
And I
beautiful.
think that sometimes people that are translating, they don't think about that, because our work is to create a bridge between words. So that's so beautiful for me. Like, oh wow, that's translation.
Yeah, for sure. So these days, what kind of work do you do? Is it also in the audiovisual area? Is it more?
Myself, I'm actually doing
I'm
a
saying,
lot of
Sarah,
adjusting.
these days, what do you do?
Okay,
I
so I'm
mean,
sorry. I heard
we'll go back to flow.
audiovisual. These days, I work. When I say we, it's because it's very hard for me not to think about my partner Alice. It's very
Okay,
hard.
so
That's
let's
why I
talk
say
about this
we.
joint venture. So since you do
Yes.
not translate alone, right? So
Yes.
you have a partner who is
So
also a
we.
translator.
Yes, she is also a translator, and we started together in the theater. She is also an actress, and I was telling Flo, that's why we created Urgas, this company, this trans feminist collective that we work, and we translate. Now we are translating forms, and we like grand forms, and we really like to do it, and we do it together, and
Are they specific
That's
grants
it.
for specific projects within the work that's more related to the community, or what kind of content is that?
Yes, they are like trans feminist forms
We have to
to
talk
break
about
the
this concept,
community.
right?
Yes, we have to.
So, Flo, let's talk about this concept, which is new for me, I have to say. I mean, I never thought about it from this perspective. So, what do we mean by this trans feminist movement, companies, ways of doing things, ways of being? What is it? I think it's just, as we all know, it's not only one feminism that exists, but several feminisms. I could say that I believe that specific feminism doesn't really is feminism as it is the TERF feminism, the trans exclusionary feminism. I don't believe it's a feminism myself. However, we do talk about trans feminism or trans feminist projects such as URGAS or the kind of work that we do. It has to do with a broader feminism that deals with different dissident identities. As like, there's no exclusion whatsoever for any other kind of identities, basically. That's like the easiest, simplest kind of way of explaining it, I guess. Yeah, So
that's a
trans
great
here means
explanation.
transversal, right? So it's transversal, not trans in any other.
I mean, actually, no, it does have to do with being inclusive of transgender population. Because, like I was mentioning before, there's a specific feminism that it's not really
inclusionary, but au contraire, it's completely exclusionary of the trans gender population.
So Sarah, you and your partner felt the need to create this company, I think it is, right?
Yes,
Collective or
we are
company.
Not just two, we are three, in fact. Like Carolina Chioco, she's a girl from Argentina. She's the person from Argentina. And then I think 2019, we started working together, the three of us. And later on, we created the collective, the company, because we noticed that there were needs for the Brazilian feminists and trans feminists to speak to people in Latin America, because we in Brazil, unfortunately, we don't feel as Latin people, and we are.
It's because
of
there
us,
is
a
right?
language. Almost, almost. Yes, there is a language barrier that's so, so difficult. And there are a lot of projects that are happening in Latin America that we don't know in Brazil or other countries, and don't know that we have the same thing in Brazil. Like, we are talking about terms that we use to designate some people in Brazil and Argentina, and they are different because
they're very
because
cultural,
we
right?
Are, of course. And like you said, arepa, arepera from Colombia.
Yeah.
That's a word in Colombia, but
exactly.
People from Argentina, they know, sometimes they know, not all the people, but.
Well, I had never heard of arepas in my life until I got to Colombia, obviously. And then, of course, people told me that it also applied to that, right? I guess we lost our flow.
Yes, we lost her.
She's out, right? So can you believe that I haven't realized that you're actually Brazilian?
Yes, I am
Which is
Brazilian.
massive failure, because I thought you were, well, maybe you are in Argentina, because the event that we would like to talk
Yes,
about is in
I
Argentina,
am in
and
Argentina.
it's an in-person event. So I'm like, oh, is she in Brazil? Okay, so
and my
that's the
partner
thing.
Alice, she lives here in Argentina.
But
so
you
that's
don't live
why
in Argentina, but you're here
no
now. You're
yes I
I
live
see.
in São Paulo.
Great. I know
yes
a
I
lot of
live in
people
São
from
Paulo.
São Paulo, of course.
That's why we have this project. I know that I'm going to start talking about it with
Yeah,
Flo.
go ahead.
And we are from three different geographies, because I am a Brazilian and I live in São Paulo. I live in Brazil. My partner, one of my partners, she's Alice. She is Brazilian. She lives in Argentina. And Flo, she's from Argentina, and but not from Buenos Aires, the capital of the country. So that's why we have three kind of different ideas of things that we use to translate, and words and terms that I was telling you. That's
So
how
you
we
guys.
start with the idea of creating this collab.
So are there any other institutions, let's call it that, or companies that call you, let's say that, or contact you in order to get your input, your consultancy? Has that happened, or is this something you would like to be happening in the future? Or do you have like an exchange or interaction with other associations, with other companies, with other collectives?
Not yet. That's something that we want for the future, because I think Flo could be here to
She's
start
coming back, I'm sure.
explaining how this process started, because she met Alice last year in Uruguay in this congress that we are going to, and they started talking and creating a glossary, of terms of LGBTQI terms, and then they invited me to do it with them. Hello, Flo. And that's how we start. But we are talking within us, like in this group. And we want to go out for the society. And we are talking like we could have a podcast maybe, because it's very cool, because we have like we are doing weekly sessions, weekly gatherings to talk about the project. And it's great. Sometimes we're there for 1 hour just talking about our lives, like what happens. And that's a
So
great way. I think that's great.
this is the reason why there's Portuguese involved in this affair that we're going to talk about. So,
Yes.
Flo, let's hear a little bit about how this came about and why and all this. Why is Sarah, obviously, but let's see how the whole idea came about and why you thought that it made sense for this collective or this company to actually have some training for translators. So what was the original idea that led you to actually create the event? And why is it an in-person event and not online for the rest of the world?
So 2 things. So the very first thing is we started, there was this Uruguayan conference of translation and interpreting. So last year, on last year's edition, I presented and I met Alice, which is Sara's partner in Urgas. I had a t-shirt that said lesbian all over. So Alice actually came to me and she
So it
was
was
like,
like
"I
they
love your
couldn't miss you,
t-shirt."
right?
Exactly. So I'd love to meet you. Let's do something together. And so we started talking in December last year, and we were like, we should, like we do have this, we share the working languages, and so we wanted to do something together. And then a couple months later, I think it was in February, Sarah joined us, and we had like several ideas. And so, but what we really wanted to start with was with the different terms of lesbian, both in Spanish and Portuguese. And then by sometime over there, we actually presented this idea with Alice for this year's edition for the CUTI, the Congreso de Uruguayo de Traducción e Interpretación. And so in May, we had the acceptance of that presentation. And so we decided that we were going to prove, in a way, or show actually the importance of this process of collective translation, right? So the entire collective translation process, specifically because we both worked with similar topics, right? So the idea was because these meetings and sessions that Sarah was mentioning, they're like so fruitful for all of us. We were like, we need to actually do this for, I mean, beyond our
For a
own screens,
wider
our own
audience.
screens, exactly. And so in Argentina, I live in Buenos Aires. Alice lives in Rosario, which is another city in Argentina, and Sara is in São Paulo. But we wanted to actually, in a way, also give way to other types of training because there aren't as many trainings in Spanish and Portuguese. In Argentina, it's mainly, or the majority of workshops and trainings are in English Spanish, right? So because Sarah was traveling to Argentina, we decided to do this a one-time,
One time,
live
we
in a
don't know,
way
right?
workshop.
You're going to do it this
But
time, and
then,
then.
exactly. But then the idea is to actually, if it's really interesting for other people, we would love to do it online as well, like a virtual editions of that. So it's also a work in progress because, just like we were talking right before the actual recording started, there's this new word that we didn't know how to say lesbian in Portugal Portuguese. So it's a thing that, there's something else that we're adding to our list of terms that we're trying to
I
eventually,
guess I'll have to do some research. I'm not really versed in the terminology, to be honest, but I know people who I'm sure are. So I can ask around and see if, because I'm sure that
That'd
there's
be
work done.
awesome.
I've met people who have been working in that area of creating glossaries with not only, the terms themselves, but also a bit of explaining, so that I guess they're actually published in the dedicated websites. So I'll have to look into that. To be honest, I don't really know, but I've heard several times that there are pockets of people, at least, who are getting this information together too. So maybe I'll do some research and then you guys can connect and then exchange your
Yeah,
experiences, right?
that'll
Great.
be awesome. That'll be awesome. Because we keep on, because here's the thing, what we believe it's actually also very interesting of this work that we're doing, the three of us, is that we all live in different cities, right? like we're from the same region in a way, but we're from different cities. And so some of the terms that we're using in Buenos Aires are not the ones used in Rosario, because, you know, Argentina, the native language is Spanish, but then in Brazil is Portuguese. And so it's a continuous, you know, exchange between the three of us to actually get to know which are the terms that I've been using, that are used actually right now, as opposed to the ones that we were using when we were younger. I'm 30 something, I'm almost 40. So probably the terms that
I'm almost 50.
are not the ones that probably, you know, that are used or that the younger generations use, right? So it's a continuous progress of learning ourselves and, you know, being able to talk to other generations of within the community, of course.
Mm-hmm. So this workshop, I think it is, right? How long does it take? What's going to happen there? Is it like with specific examples? Is it more theoretical about the whole situation of gathering the terminology? So what kind of thing can people expect if they attend?
Do you want me to go?
Yes, please. Because yes, okay. I'm not very good with those scripts. Like,
okay,
so, I told Flo, just telling you, it's my fourth podcast, my first one. So I told her, Flo, please help me, because sometimes I have no words to describe something. So that's what she's doing. Thank you, Flo.
She's like, I've been in thousands of podcasts, so I'll do the work. I'll do the heavy lifting.
Yes.
Flo, please. So the idea is, on the one hand, is to actually, you know, like I was mentioning before, like to focus on the importance of working together collectively with other people, because each one that's going to be involved in the workshop is going to bring like their own background, their own baggage, their own knowledge, you know. And then on the other hand is to try to find the different ways of research that people have for this specific topic. So we do have, the idea is for us to bring several fragments or little texts that people could actually read beforehand, so that they could, and these are specific terms, right? Of course, mm-hmm. most of them, I mean, they're in Spanish and Portuguese, and most of them have to do with dissident identities, right? So we do have several synonyms of lesbians, different types of lesbian names, and other things that I'm not going to, you know, spoil as much. But the idea Surprise. Is for people to actually, the idea is for people to actually get to know those words if they haven't seen them before. And, you know, like the actual translation, you know, process, like what do you think it means with the context, without the context? Where could you find information like this? Who would you talk to find out the meaning of these words? So those are pretty much our two goals. On the one hand is to actually focus on the importance of a collective translation process or work. And then the other is to, you know, get to know these other terms that people aren't really used to, because of the texts or the contents that we read or that we, you know, are most used to reading. I think that's...
Okay. So, Sara, all this... Yes. I'm changing the way I say her name as...
No, it's great, Sara. I prefer Sara. I like to translate my name. I'm a translator, but I like my name.
I started
name.
With Sarah, and now I'm going in Sara already. So who knows where it's going to go. I can feel it changing, right? But how do you think that all this research that you guys have been doing and all of the new collaborations that you have established with people have changed the way you do your actual translation work?
Yes, we believe that this collective work, it's essential to the translation work, because we need to be in a group. We need to do the things in a group to understand what we have to create and we have to translate. And then when we started doing it together, I translate with my partner, with my partners, especially with Alice, because we come from the same country. And we noticed that that's so important for the translation, because when you have someone working with you that can help you to validate, for example, a term, something, you are going to do it better than alone. Mm-hmm. So That's how we start to think about this workshop, because we think that people can understand that they need to be in a group to translate something, especially when we are talking about the community terms. Because how can I translate something if I'm not from this community, or if I don't have this specialization, or if I don't understand what you're talking about? I need to have a reference. I need to have someone maybe to tell me what could be the best path, best way to do it. I don't know if I answered your question, but
yes,
that's...
Yes, of course. For sure.
Like during this work, we had a problem, not a problem, but we had a doubt with a word. And since I'm part of a group, of a WhatsApp group in Brazil, of lesbians, I asked them to help me, and they don't work with translation.
Of course, but they are in the community, so they know the terminology.
But they are, yes. Mm-hmm. And when I asked them what to do, they answered, and it helped. It finished the doubts that we had, because we had other people from the community telling us, "Look, we don't use this word; we use this one."
Like your expert consultants.
Yes, yes. And I can say that's one of the techniques that we use and we want others to use to translate, to work, because we think that's a great technique when you can talk to other people. And that's something that we learn when we are studying translation. They always tell us, like, talk to other people that work in the area, or if you are translating something from engineering, let's suppose, they tell us to do it. So and when I started to do it with my partner and with other partners, I saw that, yes, that's great, because I can have the words, the ideas from other ones to help me. And that's why I believe that work and translation work, but all the words, all the jobs, they need to be collective, because we need to be in a group.
There's no more working by yourself, people.
No, you can work by yourself, of course. That's a possibility. But I think that we need a background made of people that are going to help us creating our work. I think that we always have.
Mm-hmm. So Flo, talking about impact of what you know in your work. Oh, look, this stuff, Mitcha, no? So what's the story with the big clients that you work for? I mean, how has this So how has this predicament, right, has changed and helped and shaped your work with the big guys like Netflix and all sorts of people like that? I mean, of course, I last year I had for June to celebrate Pride Month, I invited two or three people who had translated RuPaul's Drag Race, right? I'm always very interested. I think, sorry, everybody else, I think it's the hardest show on earth to translate, to subtitle. I think it's insane. I mean, the amount of things you need to know, of references, of vocabulary, of terminology that you need to know is just insane. And then the fact that you have them all over the place. And ideally, like Sara would say, these people would work together, because I think it's insane. But that's not the case, right? Usually that's not what happens. And I was really interested in knowing. So I have, I think, three episodes with people who have worked. Two episodes. It's a girl from Argentina and then a Portuguese girl. And so they have translated several series and episodes. And it's very, very interesting to hear what they have to say about it. Because, I mean, you have to be interested somehow or implicated in the situation for this to make sense to you, right? In one of the, for them, one of them is in the community, the other one is not in the community, but she has like an amazing view on how the world works, actually. So I was very impressed. So How is this research, all the things that you do, all the people you talk to, these meetings that you have, will impact? Because I'm sure this is a conversation. I have another friend in Brazil, Renata Fernandes. I don't know if you know her. She specializes in subtitling and dubbing, and she's very, very knowledgeable in all of this LGBT terminology part of things and how to make things accessible and all of this. So how has it impacted what you do for those international clients?
Well, I actually translated RuPaul's Drag Race. I translated like 4 or 5 seasons as well. So it was definitely, yes, like the most challenging work I have ever done. And the thing is that, unfortunately, so here's the thing when you work with reality TV shows, that the amount of dialogue there is just insane. And so, yes, you know, with the character limitation, you're like, pretty much screwed, right? So there is a lot of chopping, like there's a lot of information that isn't out there. And so when it happens, when people start criticizing subtitles of specific shows, like they don't really know what's behind the entire, you know,
of course,
thing. So on the one hand, it was like there was a lot of information that wasn't out there, to be honest. Then the other hand is that the other side of it, I'm sorry, was that I had a QC-er. She's the best, but in a way, she was the one that was able to tell me whether I could or not do several decisions that I made. I had a bunch of great solutions that they weren't going to work out, because the other thing is that when you work with Latin American Spanish, like what you translate needs to be understood throughout Latin America.
Yes, that's what the Paula told me. I was shocked because I thought you had a localized version for every country of Latin America. I mean, because it's for obvious reasons. And I was shocked when she told me that you actually had to do like a, let's call it, as I've heard it, universal Latin American Spanish, right? So I was shocked. Like, and how can that be? Then we go and meet what, you know, what Sara was saying, that the whole idea is that you understand that even in regions, in basically larger countries, you have a lot of differences, let alone in the whole Latin America, Spanish-speaking Latin America.
Specifically in the queer community, because it's not the exact same thing. Like, I always bring this example of how, for instance, in Argentina, in Brazil, and in Peru, travesti as an identity, it's not at all what it means transvestite in the States, for instance. So, or even in, well, I know that in Spain right now, it's actually being more resignified, the name, the word travesti, but it used to be a pejorative term, right? And so it has to do with the political activism that people do regarding identities and languages and stuff. So there's a lot of things to be taken into account whenever you're working with queer language that has to be understood throughout Latin America. So definitely, it's a work in progress. Sometimes clients are more open to suggestions, and sometimes it's not that you're being censored, but in a way, there's a lot of things that are lost in translation, unfortunately, because it happens.
Because you needed 5 or 6 lines.
Exactly. Like, it's really, 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 really hard.
Not only the difficulty, but then obviously all the innuendos, right? Because for us who have seen the show from the beginning, I've seen all seasons of all countries, okay? And I watch it all the time.
Yeah, different nuances.
Yes, but I'm always, it's impossible to watch the show with me because I'm always talking about the same stuff. What is, why this word, why this, that. I'm always like focusing on that, obviously, because it's so rich. It's one of the most insane shows I've ever seen. From any point of view, right? But from a linguistic point of view, I mean, actually deal with it.
Oh, yeah.
And when I heard that in Latin America, you had to do it for all the Spanish-speaking countries, I was like, what? How can you solve that? I have no idea how you would do it.
Right. And when I actually translated one of the seasons, one of the characters was a non-binary person. And at the time, this was 2020. This was like in the middle of the pandemics. And I was actually, my suggestion of using neutral language in Spanish was actually accepted. So that was like the very first time that there was on record that non-binary language was actually on screen. So good. Kudos. Kudos to the translation community.
Ooh, and wow, the client, that's insane. That's insane.
Yeah.
I'd like to do a session on all that. You girls we have to get together to prepare something like that. I mean, the I have talked about it with Ari and with Paula and with Marta at the time. But it's true that I think something should be done about it, because just the difficulties of thinking to begin with, not even getting into the actual linguistic performance, right? But just all the things that you have to know in order to first get the references and all of them. You have a lot of things that have happened in the 70s in San Francisco, and you have a lot of things that have happened in the first Drag Race show or the second, or, you know, it's really hard if you don't know all those episodes from back to back. How can you actually understand that? So it's like, as a show, it's very, very particular. And it also caters to a very specialized public, because people in the community are a very specialized public, right? So they know their terminology, they know their thing, and they have their references. So if someone comes and or person doesn't really have the references and researches a lot, I can only imagine that it's totally impossible, right? Or at least it doesn't make much sense. I'm sure a lot of people have been faced with it.
Like Flo is talking about Latin America, I think the same applies to Brazil. We don't have this like rule that we have to translate for all Brazilians, but the same, like I live in São Paulo. I am from Minas Gerais. It's another state. Mm-hmm. So we are in the southeast area, southeast region of Brazil. In other parts of Brazil, that are
different. It has to be very different, of course.
Yes, because we are a very large country. So I think the same. I try not to use very specific terms from São Paulo or from Minas Gerais, because I know they're not going to be understood by the Brazilians. Mm-hmm. So I try to use words that are known, and I think that are known, because I cannot confirm this, that I think that are known for the majority of the Brazilians. So I think that's something that we have to think of when we are translating. So like you said, who are we talking to? So what's the public? Because they are going to help the evaluation. They are going to do the evaluation with us of the translation. And we need to think about them. So we cannot do, that's why we need this collective work, because we are not closed in a box creating, translating. We are doing it for the society, within the society.
Yeah, that's true. So talking about that flow, in my eyes, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so, you're a very visible person, right? On LinkedIn, which is really where I met you, right? So I'm wondering if it's common for you to be called by, you know, companies or institutions for your, not only your input, but to like create courses, do workshops. Is this common, or is this something that you have planned for the future, or do you already have something out there?
I don't think I'm visible enough, and I don't think I post as I should, as much as I should.
Everybody thinks that about themselves.
Hopefully, that'll change. So I have this new project that I'm thinking on, thinking of. I've had some requests of providing or giving workshops internationally. So I think that it works in a way, and I think that actually what makes me in a way more visible, if you could say that, is that because I am specialized in this specific topic, and I have been doing some research, and I have been talking to other colleagues as well. In 2018, we created a feminist collective with in Argentina with other translators and interpreters, and that was actually very helpful to start talking about specific topics that we didn't talk before, or as much, or as open in a way. So maybe that was like one of the first things that we did as a collective, but then there's something that I continue doing on my own. But once again, I don't think I'm as visible as I should, or as I would love to. So probably that's gonna change. Let's hope so.
Yeah, because I mean, it just seems very obvious that this conversation needs to be out there as much as possible, and that, you know, I already know what it is. I talked to this other girl. She wasn't subtitling RuPaul, but she's actually doing research in France for her PhD, and it's also about inclusive language and all of that stuff. So there's a lot of people that I know. I could, you know, get you guys in a few people that I know, get you guys in contact with to actually, you know, exchange ideas and see what the story is, because I'm sure there's a lot of work that's being done, and who knows if it could create some sort of a more universal glossary, you know, with a bunch of languages and people explaining
Yes.
why and why not, and exchanging all of those ideas and all of that stuff.
I
So,
would love
yes.
that. I would love that. There's
Right.
a I don't know if you know, but there is there's a conference that's called Lavender Languages that it's amazing. I mean, actually last week
Missing out, missing
or
out.
this
Yes, last week we were talking
oh
about it.
last week was it? Okay, so this is the
And was
conference.
it?
This was like the 30th edition. And so it's done like once a year somewhere around the world. This time was in Brighton, UK. Last year was in, I think it was Sicily in Italy. And so Lavender Languages have to do with basically, I mean, it's related to gender, language, sex, but it has to do mainly with, I mean, this is what I'm trying to say, that it has to do with queer tongues in a way. What do I mean by that? It has to do with the way the community speaks. And so one of the things that, or one of like the first Lavender language that there is record of is called Polari, which is like the specific dialect that the gay, the actually not gay people as a whole, but actual gay men that used to use in the UK in 1930s. Because, you know, we all know that homosexuality is still banned in a lot of countries, but it was banned until the 1960s or 1970s, I think it was in the UK. And so gay men used to use that dialect to, you know, to see whether they were actually gay men, like talking to, you know, that kind of thing.
Like
And
knowing a
so,
secret password or something that would be like this. So
exactly. It
let's
was
call it language, right?
definitely a secret language, definitely. It was called a secret language. And you know, I think that has to do also with the kind of work that we do with Urgas as well, you know, like these languages that we use within the community. In Argentina, we had the Calrilche, which is like the languages or the dialect that was used by the travestis, which is the exact same thing that it's in Brazil. It's called the Pajubá. So this is a specific dialect that it's used within the community, which is, of course, it's secret because in a way, people of those communities or of those populations don't really want other people to know what they're saying, right? So the
Yes.
Carriche in Argentina was actually used to for travestis or trabas. We call them trabas here, so that they could actually talk, you know, with themselves and also being able to warn themselves whether the police was coming or not for them to get them. Because also in Argentina, if you were used, I mean, this is called a transvestite kind of thing. So if people were using, even though they were travestis, in the legal language in a way was transvestite, which is not the exact, like, exact same thing, right? And so if you they were wearing clothes that were from the opposite sex, they would also go into jail. So the carriche, what they used was for them to actually avoid that in a way.
Wow. Wow.
And so yeah, it happens the exact same thing in Brazil. I bet Sara can also mention some more, but that, you know, like the bicha, viado kind of language that we use in Brazil, it's all part of
Yes.
the travesti
Because
community.
that's pretty
Exactly.
widespread everywhere, right? These
Yes.
days.
I know I'm not going to comment a lot about this kind of language because I don't use it in my daily routine. So
Which is a positive thing, really.
yes.
Oh, yeah.
But for example, we talk a lot, and when we are talking to other people, like I'm a Portuguese teacher. I'm a Portuguese teacher for foreigners. And that's something that we know, we all know, but when you are leaving you're learning a new language, it's very important to understand that you cannot use the words that translate the things that you are learning with everyone. For example, sapatão e lésbica. And lésbica. Those two words, they are very important to understand that someone can call me, for example, a lesbian, a lésbica. But not everybody can call me sapatão.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's contextual. Important. It has to do with the relationship. So that kind of knowledge.
Yes, that's very, very important. Sometimes we just understand that talking to other people or being inside the community, not as a LGBT person, but as a, I don't know, to be inside the community or viado and gay. We have to understand that those words can be used, but they are different in some way.
Yeah.
It depends on the context with whom you're talking to. So it's very important to understand that. And that's something that we started to see while we were talking, and not see, but understanding while we are talking, creating this collab, because sometimes there is a word that's going to get to be in Argentina, a Brazilian word, and the Argentinians, they think, oh, okay, we can use this word. But no, it depends on where you are or whom you're talking to, because sometimes you cannot use this word. So I think that's something from the language as well, and something that we have to understand while we are talking another language. That's why I feel it's very risky in a way, not risky, but for me, it's risky to speak Spanish or to speak English, because I try not to use words that are words
not appropriate
words.
For the context.
Because sometimes they can be harmful in a way.
Or hurtful. Yes, for sure.
Yes, hurtful, of course.
Yes. My God. Well, obviously, I told you this was going to go where I didn't know it was going to go.
Yes.
You're going to say flow before I started talking. Go ahead.
I was actually going to say that another thing that happens that we've also been talking a lot with Urgas is that we tend to create words, not only to re-signify them, but also to create them. So one of the things that actually got us together was there was a lesbicide in Argentina. A lesbicide is a hate crime towards lesbians, you know, towards a lesbian orientation. And so there was this lesbicide of three lesbians. And so one of the things that we started talking is that, okay, so first thing, we actually Googled lesbicide, and there's only 1,880 appearances on Google search.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's not a lot of it, but it exists. And actually, most of the articles are related to what happened in Argentina. And so this word, which is in Spanish, lesbocidio, in Portuguese, we found it as lesbocidio y lesbicidio. Those are two terms. And at the same time, Urgas was telling me that it wasn't as used as it was here in Argentina. And
I had never heard it at all.
And because of what happened in Argentina, the lesbian community started using it a lot. So now it's like a common word, like a neologism that started to be used in Argentina. And so another word here that was like from 2018, it's travesticidio, which is also a hate crime towards travestis. And so, yeah, because, you know, legally it actually, it's actually, the conviction would be harsher because it was.
So it's a legal term, really.
I mean, it was legal. I mean, it was presented as a travesticidio, like the entire claim, legal claim. But then something happened. That
right. But there is a legal vanished term, let's call it that, that it's.
But it was, and and it's still used. I mean, yeah, it is still used here in Argentina. Yeah.
That was a thing that we did during the collab, because there was a lesbicide here in Brazil in December of last year. And it was very, very cruel of Ana Caroline Campelo. And at the same time, There was another, let's decide this one that Flo is talking about that happened in Buenos Aires. And we start seeing how the press was publishing things about those crimes. How was the language being used? And we now know lesbicide is a legal word, and now it's in process of being used by the government and the press in Brazil.
Wow.
Because the community is struggling, fighting for this use. So we know that lesbicide, lesbocidio in Brazil, it's only going to be used like by the press and by the governments if the community is fighting, because the community is. So, and that's something that we were seeing a lot in the interviews and slogans and articles talking about those crimes that happened in Brazil and Argentina.
Wow. Well, I had no idea. Just learning a lot. I'm just like, wow. So yeah, so I mean, it needs to be, you know, widespread what you guys do, I think, because it's so interesting, so important, and it has such impact. That's really what's most relevant. It's insane. I mean, now I'm like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? So you guys, thank you so much. This was a lot of information. I guess there's a lot of things for me to research from this. There's a lot of workshops that could happen from this type of information, because it's actually fascinating. Of course, any type of terminology will always fascinate me. If I have something to do with it, then it's even more interesting. So you guys, thank you so much for accepting to come from one night to another, to a morning in your case. It was my night and your morning. So thank you so much, you guys, for accepting. And I hope that we keep the conversation going and that we do something together in the future, because maybe I could, you know, look around and see what's available here, and we can, you know, mesh up our heads and come up with something that is interesting or relevant for the community and everybody else involved, because it's everybody's affair, right? Like I always say, it's public life. It's not private life. Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
So guys, thank you so much. This is amazing. I hope your event goes very, very well. And this is just the pilot, as we call it, and that you then do a lot of editions, either Brazilian Portuguese and Spanish, or Spanish and European Portuguese, or English or French, or whatever you guys think it's necessary. But definitely you should have to keep going with the works flowing and the juices flowing, so that people are more informed and it's safer. Knowledge gives you more safety, right? So that's what's really important. So thank you so much, you guys, and I'll see you very
soon. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much for the space. It's great to be here and to talk about us, about our work. That's great. Thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you.